T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Come on.
And a big one today. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, Dallas Keuchel, the first member of the 2017 Houston Astros. Yes, that is correct, Mr. President. The first member of the 2017 Astros that has apologized for the Astros cheating in 2017. He said, "I personally am sorry for what's come about it." Went on and talked a little bit more.
I think first and foremost, I think apologies should be, you know, in order for if not everybody on the team. And when the stuff was going on, it was never intended to be what it's made to be right now. And I think when stuff comes out about things that happened during the course of a big league ball season, it's always blown up to the point of, oh my gosh, this has never happened before. I mean, I'm not going to go into specific detail, but during the course of the playoffs in 17, everybody was using multiple signs. I mean, for factual purposes, when there's nobody on base, when in the history of Major League Baseball has there been multiple signs? So you can go back and watch film of every team in the playoffs. There was probably 6 out of 8 teams using multiple signs. So it's just what the state of baseball was at that point in time. Was it against the rules? Yes, it was. And, you know, I personally am sorry for what's come about, the whole situation.
That's Dallas Keuchel with about as much insight on the whole cheating scandal that was rocking the Houston Astros, and kind of threw a little bit of innuendos out there that was the current state of affairs in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, which is what we've heard, you know, from the jump, is that this is something that's widespread, and it's unfortunate that that there has to be a face of a scandal, and the face of this particular scandal happens to be the Astros, and you know, we've said that from the jump, man. Is you look at the steroids, the face of the steroids era was who? McGuire, Sosa, I mean, Clemens, and you know, there's a handful of players that ended up having to take the fall, and it's unfortunate that it happens to be the Astros. I don't think there's anybody out there that believes that this was the only organization that the Red Sox and the Astros are the only two organizations that were doing it. But when it's all said and done, they've investigated one team, and there's been findings of one team, and that team's been penalized. And so the Astros are going to have to take the brunt of it, and we'll move forward. You know, this is what's wrong with apologies, in my opinion. Right, is now I don't care enough, to be completely honest with you. Like, I don't care enough about any person that I don't know that was an athlete in his apology to really dissect it and question it. But as I'm sitting there listening to it, I go, okay, so you say it wasn't a big deal, right? Yeah, why do you say it's not a big deal? This is a huge deal, right? So my point is that you apologize. And in your apology, because you are willing to go a little bit further than anybody else, now the media just latches onto the one or two things that could be misconstrued, or that can be stretched into other points. And that's what's dangerous about this, is like, because if the Astros or the Red Sox or anybody else that was cheating, or if Roger Clemens or if Mark McGuire or if Sammy Sosa, if they stand up and say, yeah, we did it and it wasn't that big of a deal, now I got a problem with it, right? Now, if you try to minimize it by saying it's not a big deal, to me, that's not it. That's not the answer, right? I mean, the apology is, hey, it's a big deal. We screwed up. We weren't the only ones doing it. We screwed up. But the more guys that apologize, the more the media is going to pick apart what they say, the more questions are going to be asked. That's why I'm just of the owner apologized. If one or two players steps up and says something, boom, let's move on and go play ball.
Yeah, it's ambiguous, right, what Keuchel said. I mean, he said that six of the eight playoff teams basically were using multiple signs with nobody on base, which is a massive tell that everybody was trying in some form or fashion to pick up signs in some form or fashion, and that's why they had multiple signs and complicated signs with nobody on base, because that was the state of baseball. So you're right. Like, that apology, I'm sorry I did it, but – you know, we were just one of many. Like, what are you actually accomplishing?
Okay, yeah. So now you're opening a can of worms.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, six of eight teams in the playoffs. What eight teams were in the playoffs? Let's go talk to them. And now you got a player accusing all but two of the teams in the playoffs of stealing signs electronically, essentially. Because if a guy's not on second base and the catcher is aware that people are stealing signs, I'm assuming if it's a first base coach or the third base coach, then he clearly is gonna hide it better.
Any professional catcher's hiding signs really well.
Right. So when you hear him say that and signs are being stolen without a runner on second base, he might as well say, I know signs are being stolen illegally electronically.
Yeah.
That's what he just said, right?
That's what he just
said. And so now you go back and it just opens that can of worms of more questions and more questions and more questions. And so it's just, let's move on, man. Like, I don't need apologies. The more these guys talk, the more widespread it is, the more questions the media is going to have. It's nobody wins. Yeah. Nobody wins in these kind of scenarios, man. It's just, the league needs to put their foot down. I believe they've made an example out of the Astros. You keep tabs on it, and if you catch wind of it moving forward, it's a $5 million fine. Your coach and your GM are out. And eventually it'll slow down, but this is precisely why I don't like I don't care what anybody else does, but I don't like the thought of the Astros players apologizing.
I think it'd be real easy too if the commissioner of baseball would do something proactive about this whole deal too, and try to figure out a way that the catcher and the pitcher and maybe a bench coach can communicate and try to relay signs in verbally and have some sort of verbal code. That this stuff would go away like that. It'd go away as soon as next season, because it'd be impossible to steal signs. One more for Keuchel. We'll get away from the apologies. We'll look ahead. But remember, Mike Fiers is the name that's been used, is the guy who started all of this.
He's the rat.
Here's Dallas Keuchel when asked about Mike Fiers.
That's a tough subject because you're such a tight-knit community in the clubhouse, and in baseball especially. You're playing 162 games at least in the regular season plus spring training, and then maybe in the playoffs if you're lucky. So you're pushing 185, 200 games, and it sucks to the extent of the clubhouse rule was broken. That's where I'll go with that. I mean, I don't really have much else to say about Mike.
So kind of clubhouse rules were broken and doesn't have anything else to say about Fiers. Kind of gives you an idea that Dallas Keuchel was not too pleased that Mike Fiers went off and ran his mouth a little bit.
Yeah, another loser in this situation, right? I mean, it's just he's one of those guys that I think will be blackballed in the league ultimately moving forward. He may not be from one or two teams, but his opportunities will be limited in this league because of what he's done. You know what I mean? It's just, to me, it's just one of those deals where, again, there's not a winner.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the career of Mike Fiers, because he's under contract for one more year with Oakland. Then what happens after that? Does he get a little bit of a black ball because of this whole deal ratting out teammates, or does everybody just kind of look at him as
anybody,
a heroic figure?
Does anybody out there want to make a bet that he doesn't play beyond that year in Major League Baseball?
Well, I mean, if he goes out and has a 3 ERA and wins 18 games, I think he'd play again.
Is there a player out there worth a – okay, let's assume what Dallas Keuchel said. Six of eight teams were doing it. We all believe that baseball is a game of pushing the envelope at the very least, if not breaking rules until you're caught. I mean, do you want a player in your organization that's going to come play for you for a year and you know he's going to step out of the clubhouse and go down the street and step in front of the media and talk about every way you bent the rules and possibly broke the rules?
Yeah.
To me, I don't give a damn what the guy does. There's no way on this earth that you invite that into your organization.
Meanwhile, the Astros are interviewing Brad Ausmus today. Expected that Jim Crane's going to get the managerial potential list, the candidate list, to about 3 or 4 this weekend, and then also saying that a decision could come as early as next week. We'll see how that goes. Rockets in action tonight. They're in Minnesota to face the Timberwolves. You were at the Toyota Center the other night.
Was.
You
come
saw
on.
Them snap their 4-game skid against a good Denver Nugget team. Are they back on track with Mike D'Antoni?
Back on track. I don't know. That was a beat-up Denver Broncos. I mean, Denver Broncos. Denver Nuggets team.
Broncos pretty beat-up, too.
Yeah, the Broncos are beat-up, too. But yeah, no, I mean, look, it was a beat-up team. I think the Rockets went in there in a situation where they needed something good to happen desperately, and they got it done. I mean, I think the skid or the problems that the Rockets have I guess had recently at the last week, 10 days, 2 weeks, they would have been a lot worse had they lost to Denver at home, and with Denver in the shape that they were in, and so they took care of business. I think there were some really good things. Eric Gordon steps on the floor, and when Eric Gordon gets to rocking, and when he's shooting the ball well, when he's getting good looks and he's knocking them down, this team and what this team wants to do with all the analytics behind it, the beating teams from beyond the arc, the getting up as many three-pointers as you possibly can in a game, when Eric Gordon is in that formula and he's knocking down shots, this team – if you're a believer in that approach, this team is hitting on all cylinders in that approach, in that analytical approach, in that three-point isolation ball type approach. That's a tell-all. When the straw that stirs the drink, when Eric Gordon's knocking them down, boom, thumbs up. Now the question is for me, the next takeaway from that game is I watch Clint Capella in more of a situation where there was not a lot of confidence, right? Catch the ball down low. How quick can I get this thing? It looked like me in a pickup game on the court, like with my back to the basket. Get this thing out of here. I don't want no parts of it. And I just think the way that this league is, I think that's a problem. And we saw it be a problem last year versus Golden State when Looney and Green and those guys were able to have their way with Capella. I think it's even more going to be more of a problem moving forward with the way that the West is laying out with some bigger bodied, more physical teams instead of that finesse stuff that Golden State was playing. And so I'm just concerned. I left that game excited about Eric Gordon, blown away with the athleticism and explosiveness of Westbrook, and more concerned with what I see from Capella on a consistent basis.
I think I'm burned out of the system, to be honest with you. I think the way that the Rockets play, the whole analytical side of the thing, I think I'm all burned out about it. When you're hitting shots, it covers up a lot of warts, right? Like whenever you're hitting a three, whenever you're taking it with 18 seconds on the shot clock, up by 10 points with 2 minutes left to play, that's bad ball. But whenever the shot's going in, it covers up the wart of playing bad ball. And you can watch this Rockets game over the stretch of any five-game stretch this season, and they make constant mistakes where that's just not good basketball. Whether it's James Harden jacking up a shot with 18 in the shot clock with a step-back three up huge late in the game, not smart ball. Whether it's Russell Westbrook, who's not a good three-point shooter, shooting 10 threes in a game. And respectfully to Russell Westbrook, he hasn't been doing that as much recently. But this like analytics that the three-pointer is way better than the two, yes, that sounds great whenever the shots are falling. But there's times whenever you need an easy bucket. There's a time when James Harden needs to knock down a mid-range jumper, especially in the playoffs, especially in the postseason. Like, sometimes you need an easy bucket, especially when you have a lead.
I did walk away. I tell you, in person, I was blown away with the difference of James Harden's on the floor playing isolation ball and James Harden's off the floor with Westbrook dominating the ball, running his offense, screen, pick and roll, people moving without the ball. I knew that was the case when I watched him on TV, but when you see it in person, you can hear it. You can hear, I mean, you can hear guys working harder and moving. We were that close to the floor where you could hear it. That's a real problem as well.
I saw the Rockets' Twitter a couple months ago. They tweeted out James Harden hitting a step-back three, like with a minute and a half to play, up by 10, with like 20 on the shot clock. It went in. They're glorifying it. That's great. But it's bad basketball, and we see it over and over with a Mike D'Antoni coach team. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. Going to talk about a couple of quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson called this season a success. Eli Manning, his career is over. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame? We'll ask his brother next. It's Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Deshaun Watson out in Orlando enjoying the Sunshine State ahead of Sunday's Pro Bowl. Second time in 3 years that Deshaun Watson has made the Pro Bowl. I'll venture as far to say that he would have been a Pro Bowler his rookie year had he stayed healthy, because he was doing some pretty historic stuff in the first six games of his career. He had a conversation with D.P. Sidhu. D.P. Sidhu also going out to Orlando, having a one-on-one with Deshaun Watson. She gets a free trip out to the Pro Bowl. Why not? She had a Pro Bowl type of season. Here is that conversation. Deshaun Watson called this year a successful season.
Overall, the whole game, my leadership role, just being able to, you know, take my game to another level in the knowledge of the game and in different situations. So, overall, year three was, it didn't end the way we wanted to end, but it was also a success, too.
Deshaun Watson calling it a success. We've talked about this offense, Clint. We've talked about how it's not clicking on all cylinders. You have all the pieces. You have what John McClain calls left tackle that's going to make the most money ever signed by an offensive lineman. You have Deshaun Watson, the Michael Jordan coming out of Clemson, has been to the Pro Bowl two or three years. You have the best wide receiver in the NFL in DeAndre Hopkins. Good pieces on the offense. The offense kind of not living up to expectations, not living up to the talent. You didn't go further than you have. You lost in the divisional round to Kansas City. Was it a successful season?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it depends on how you look at it, JB. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at it from Deshaun Watson, the quarterback's perspective, and you go, hey, man, this year you came in healthy. I do believe that, although I'm not a huge fan of the offensive scheme and the offensive identity, whatever that may be, the offensive situation with the Houston Texans and the coordinators of the offense, I think that's the number one thing that needs to change this year. But I do believe that he showed better command of the situations that he was put in.
All right, there, big boy.
Yeah, I mean, I about ripped my end of my finger off trying to pull my fat ass up to this table again, man. Dang. That's right. I think when you look at all things like from the quarterback lens, right? If I'm looking strictly through the quarterback lens, there's several reasons to say, yeah, absolutely this year was a success for Deshaun Watson. Year one, you play six, get hurt. Year two, you play the season, you get sacked 8,000 times, but you find a way to get to the first round of the playoffs and you get embarrassed. Year three, you scratch and claw, you show some flashes of some good things offensively, of some development offensively, and you get to the second round of the playoffs. It all be whether you love it or hate it, it was pretty or not, you still got there. So I think as a quarterback, if you're just building a resume, sure, it was a success. I think it's important to note that you heard Deshaun say, we're not happy with the results, but it was a success. So, yeah, as you look at it through Deshaun Watson's lens and the quarterback lens, I definitely think it was 2019 was a success.
I think that a lot of times Texans fans, the way the season ended, the disappointment that it left after blowing that 24-0 lead against Kansas City, whenever they hear that word success, it kind of bothers them because they don't think the season was successful. But if you look at a third-year quarterback, that career trajectory, that career plight is where it should be for Deshaun Watson. He's had a great start to his career. Does he need to take the next step? Yes. Do the Texans offensively, collectively need to take a next step to be Super Bowl contenders? Yes. And that's kind of where I am. What is next in year four? If year four is successful, like year three was, what does year four look like for Deshaun Watson and the Texans offense?
JB, look, you hit it. You hit the nail on the head. I don't know what year four is going to look like, brother. I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence offensively that it's going to look different than it looked this year. Right, I mean, it's going to depend on does Fuller stay healthy. Well, I think we'll still be searching for why in the hell are they so much better when Fuller's there than without him. You know, I think you're still going to have an inflated number or a large number of sacks because of the way that Deshaun Watson plays the game, coupled with the fact that there's zero creativity on this offense, and so it's hard to create separation. It's harder than it should be for a team that's this skilled to play quality offense. I think we're still going to have all those concerns next year. But you made a great point. If earlier when we talked about this specific topic, was you asked Deshaun Watson says that versus Bill O'Brien says that. Mm-hmm. If I hear Deshaun Watson say it and I'm talking about quarterback development, I'm looking through the quarterback lens, then yeah, I'm cool with it. If Deshaun Watson says that, if Bill O'Brien says that and I hear the head coach, the offensive coordinator of this offense say that, then I've got some concerns,
right?
I mean, and along the lines of what I just the spiel I just gave of what needs to happen offensively, or what will happen if there's not change made offensively, is we'll still have a lot of the same questions, the same old problems, and the stats may vary a little bit. The completion percentage may be down 1 or 2 points or up 1 or 2 points. the touchdown to interception ratio may be up or down a little bit, and we'll be, you know, but you're not gonna see a huge swing in identity. You're not gonna see a huge swing in the product on the field and the confidence in that product and the ability to execute at a high level. It's still gonna lean heavily on Deshaun Watson's ability to put that cape on and be Superman, and that's unfortunate. So if when I hear Deshaun say that, cool with it. Good idea. Good. I can get down with that. Deshaun, I agree. If I heard Bill O'Brien say that, I'm cringing.
Yeah, everybody would cringe. And you hear O'Brien talk about that at times. We've done some good things here. But, of course, haven't done what everybody wants us to do. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. That was Deshaun Watson out in Orlando at the Pro Bowl, where yesterday he took part in the skills competition. Didn't, you know, put up a lot of points, but he looked okay throwing the football. Lamar Jackson, on the other hand, not so much.
Well, in all fairness, let's be honest, Deshaun didn't look good. I mean, he didn't. If we had Deshaun in here right now, I think Deshaun would tell you that he was not happy with his performance. He hit two targets. My man hit two targets. Now, it's a 35-point max. If you hit every target, once you hit one target, you can't hit it again. He hit a four, and he hit the five. He hit the two. He hit two of the most difficult three to hit, and then never really attempted much at the underneath stuff. But it wasn't pretty. Technically, he looked good. Technically, he stood in there, threw the football. I wish he'd follow through a little bit more. I wish he'd finish on his front foot more. Just for whoever, if Sean's out there listening, I wish you would transfer your weight more and finish on your front foot instead of almost push back out of every throw.
You can have you seen this in games too?
Or you can watch
okay,
it. When he,
this
watch
isn't
it.
Just a
you can watch it when he warms
skills
up.
Skills competition.
You can watch it when he warms up. He does it. He pushes out of it like he instead of transferring onto his left foot, he throws and then pushes almost back and backs out of throws. And so it's just a product of this big. This is a big.
That's not good. Like, I mean, you look at a pitcher that does that, you're getting no zip on the fastball.
Yeah, well, it's different than baseball. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I don't know that it's no good, but I do think that not finishing in your left foot, not transferring your weight, even though it's a 2-inch push, it's a 2-inch transfer, right? It's not a 10-inch, like baseball, they fall off the pitcher's mound or you chase the baseball kind of deal. Football is a 2-inch push and rotate, right? And so that 2-inch push should push you from your back foot to your front foot, and you should finish on your front foot.
Almost like a golf swing.
Yeah, and I'm being very, very picky. I'm picking it apart, but I just wish because then you get more power behind the ball, and so then your finesse balls are more arm. You can use your arm to be more finesse, and your weight transfer and your rotation is where you draw your power. And so it's just a different stroke. You can see it. Russell Wilson is beautiful. He overstrides a little bit, locks his left knee, and he's work on that. But man, his stroke, and it's truly beautiful. And so, technically, outside of that little bit of weight transfer issue, I think Deshaun looked really good. Lamar Jackson is the one that was bad, man. Wade and I had a conversation about it yesterday, about this being a big opportunity for these guys that have been questioned throughout their career, whether it's accuracy with Deshaun Watson or it's all things, all of the above technically for Lamar Jackson. It was an opportunity for them to really showcase and prove that they've technically made some leaps and bounds. I think Deshaun proved that he's pretty solid technically. Lamar backslid big time. The expectations for me weren't really high for Lamar. I did expect to see some progress and some development. And, man, I saw more backyard ball, sidearm slinging, no technique whatsoever being used. And the result was my man hit 2 1-point targets.
Oof,
two
yeah, he didn't look good.
1-point targets, man. I could go out there. I feel like I could go out there and get 35 points. I feel confident in saying I could give you 15.
We have to set this up. We have to get this done some way, somehow.
I feel you set it up and let me practice?
No, you can't practice. I doubt that they practiced.
The hell you mean they didn't practice? They've been playing football all year long.
I meant through the actual competition.
I'm talking about get my arm in shape.
Maybe a few months?
Yeah, don't even a few months. Give me a week's notice.
Well, you just said they had played the whole season. I thought you might
have
a few months.
Yeah, but I'm coming fresh off the couch, baby.
So
damn, like
a couple weeks?
I'm pretty confident that I can give you 15 right now. You give me time to prep, I might be able to give you 20.
All All right. Let's set that up. Let's figure out a way to set that up, and we'll see if Clint can put his money where his mouth is.
I know I could drop eight on you in a heartbeat because they had the fours and the deep balls are fours. I could drop that song buck in a garbage can.
How far was that? Because that looked like an easy throw to me.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like an easy throw, and then Lamar came up short about four times.
But then Cousins does it, bam, bam.
I'm going to guess it was around 35 to 40 yards.
Okay, that makes it a little more
difficult. I mean, if I were setting that drill up, I would set it up at 45 yards down the field, about anywhere from 3 to 5 yards off the sideline. That's typically where you try to drop a go route in a bucket. You want to, and look, this is not, nowadays it's gun, three-step, boom, let it rip. Gun, three-step, let it rip. You should be dropping in that 40 to 45 yard range, about 3 to 5 yards off the sideline, and a receiver should be able to adjust and just drop it in the bucket, baby.
Sports fans are getting soft. I tell you why next. Also, Clint's got something to say about Lopez. I guess he was being a little grumpy today. Talked about some stereotypes today. We're going to get into that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get into that next. Clint Stoner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leaders, Sports Radio 610.
Hey, JB.
What's up?
I didn't mean to cut you off right there, but this
text
line.
Yes, you did.
Line,
you meant
this, it. Yeah, I did. I meant every damn bit of it. Give me a second, Chief. Hey, this text line over here is talking, baby.
All right, what are they saying?
Boy, you done gave my idea with this quarterback competition thing right here. I got $100 bills floating around over here.
You have $100
bills? I got $100 bills floating around over here on the text line, brother. They said, one guy said 610 needs to set that up. With a cook-off geared to help charity, let the fans compete against Clint. The funny thing is I've already talked to our sales group about a local sports bar and some things going on where this is – we're trying to work that actually into it because I can knock down some targets, Coach.
I've never seen you throw.
I can – well, hell, what the I've hell never are you seen doing? You throw. Get on YouTube, son.
I know what you're a little young. I know you're a little young ass.
I know you're a little young ass. Can't relate to that old fuzzy film. That old fuzzy. It ain't HD, but damn, go get you a peek at it.
I've never seen you throw. Let's see. What happens when you type
hadn't seen you throw
into YouTube?
I shake
the
down.
First thing that comes
I shake Jimbo Fisher's hand, and Jimbo Fisher says, "Oh, you played at Arkansas, didn't you, Jimbo? Come, that's worth looking at, man. Damn, come on, man.
I got your highlights up right now."
Look,
I'm going to tell you what. A little bit on the back foot. It's a good pitch. It was a good pitch on that first highlight.
Oh, look, they're here. Don't do it.
Hey,
don't
they
do
threw
it.
Through. They threw it to you.
Yeah, you were making fun of the pitch, and then you saw that athlete, that QB, throw it to the QB, didn't they? Is that against Kentucky?
You got really excited. I'm not sure. There's a little.
Was it a short one or was it a
drop,
long one?
Little air under that one. That's a good ball. That's a good ball.
JB, you ain't sitting next to you every day. You're just some old everyday son, right, buck.
Goal line packet. Quarterback sneak diving over the offensive line.
Got hops.
I'm impressed. Three plays in, I'm impressed. I knew you played the position at a high level. I'm not an idiot.
We've been together this long, and you ain't never seen me throw. That's a hell of a deal. That is a hell of a deal.
Back, honest with you.
Back to this text line talking over here. Got another guy. Says, Clint, I'll put 100 on it. You can't do it. So I hit him up. I said, well, it could be a girl. I don't know. Whoever it is, 8404. I said, what are you talking about? You don't think I can score 15 points in that competition? He said, nope. I said, hey.
Nope.
Hey, I said, here's the deal. Bet. Put your money where your mouth's at, and I appreciate them small head hundreds. I don't like them new ones with the big face on them. I want the little bitty. I want that old money. I want that old Houston oil field money that you got in your pocket, partner. Put 100 on it, and I want the 100 to have a small head. And, yeah, that's you talking about them cold Coors Lights, too. I can drink 15 of them. YouTube, 4 interceptions against the Giants. Yeah, do that, too. YouTube, 4 interceptions against the Giants, 4089, and watch me play professional ball for the Dallas Cowboys against the New York Giants. Do that for me. Well, yeah, you know what? People like that. I mean, what's your outlook on life? Of all the things to text in, you pick your phone up and you text YouTube, 4 INTs against the Giants.
Well, I'm going to have to do that.
It was a bad day now. Watch the first half. Watch the first half. The first half was good. The second half was not good. I mean, that's one of the worst days of my life, and somebody wants to text in and tell you to go YouTube it.
Well, you know how people think.
And then my dumb ass reads it over the air. I mean, I'll be damned. Boy, I tell you what, y'all ain't worth killing, man.
So, back to the competition.
Okay, what do you want to talk about it?
What were we set the over under at? Like, I didn't watch it. Like, I saw Lamar Jackson throw. I saw Cousins put on a pretty good display. I saw Jarvis Landry. I saw Davante Adams. So I don't really know what the good, like a good number is. Like, if we're setting an over under on how many points you can get, How much, like, what's a solid over-under?
You got to remember there was a time frame on there,
yeah,
too.
Was it a minute?
It a minute and a half or 2 minutes? No, it was definitely over a minute.
It was over a minute.
I think.
So what would you put the over-under at? 15? 16?
15 would be a really good number for me.
So let's put it at, like,
13
and a half.
All things considered, I would put the over-under at double digits. That's what I would do.
Double digits.
Yeah, I mean, if you get into the double digits, that's fair. That'd be the over. If you're just a random over-under line. If I'm going to bet some guy on our person on the text line $100, I'm in on $100 for fit that I can get 15.
It's all going to charity, of course. All going to charity.
Nah, I bet you $100 straight up is going to my pocket, baby. You ain't gonna, I'm not going to let you feel good about it at the end.
You don't
it's
want
going
those.
To my pocket, though. We'll talk charity after.
The small head hunted to get out of the pocket. Huh?
If you got a small head hunted to bet on me, to bet on against me, and if I win, you can put another small head hunted towards the charity. You hear me?
We're going to get this done some way, somehow. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Gary Sheffield Jr. sounding off a little bit on this Dallas Keuchel apology. He said, how to determine sincerity of the apology? Did they apologize? Check. Did they avoid downplaying? Clank. Gary Sheffield Jr. giving a little shade to Dallas Keuchel, the first member of the 2017 Houston Astros to have apologized for the cheating scandal.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm sitting here looking at social media in the break, and it's exactly what my man Matt Weaver, he tagged us on it, so I appreciate you, Matt, for tagging us on it, at Matt Weaver. Immediately after the apology, actually this guy retweets Keuchel's apology and it says, appreciate the apology, but if the Astros are going to cheat on 9/21/17 as they did versus Farquhar, what is that?
Danny Farquhar was the pitcher that
pitcher.
Noticed the sounds.
Damn, I thought that was some kind of creature off of one of them shows. With a 17-game division lead in the AL West clinched, I'll assume they did it in a lot of games, especially the important ones. And so my man Matt Weaver, which I greatly appreciate. I'm a fan, Matt, by the way. This is what I'm talking about for people saying the Astros need to apologize. The national media says they want an apology just so they can criticize it and say thanks but no thanks. They don't need to apologize. And he goes on and said he had to go Larry from Stafford on him. but that's precisely what I'm talking about, is that it don't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot win by apologizing to people that aren't going to accept the apology. Look here, we had a guy text in earlier and yesterday, and he said, I got a little boy that's a fan, and when his Astros got caught cheating, he wanted to know if he was a cheater. You know what I mean? Hey, if there's 1,000 little fellas out there, little girls and little boys out there that are that invested in the Astros, I need you to do two things. One, I want you to teach them the lesson that this could happen to anybody, and nobody's perfect, and we need to forgive them.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, I want you to call the Astros or contact the Astros in some way, shape, or form, and I'm positive that the Astros players will do a fan day for those little fellas and little girls and we'll apologize to them.
Right.
Right. But when we talk about apologies, national media, on a national stage, man, get the hell out of here. I'm over that, man. It took one guy. It took one guy apologizing and my man Matt Weaver to point it out and tag me and you on Twitter, and boom, there you got it. That's exactly why you don't need it. It's more harm than it is good. And there's no sense in it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of apologies to begin with. Like, oh, you screwed up. You're telling me you're sorry. Like, I appreciate the remorse a little bit, but, like, fix it. Like, do something with your actions as opposed to you just being, hey, man, my bad, I'm sorry. Like, sorries don't do much for me. And that's a great point by Matt. Like, we demand this apology. You must apologize to us, Astros. We feel cheated for what you did in 2017. So apologize so we can mock and ridicule and scoff at your apology. Like, nothing good comes out of it. I'm on your side with this, and I wish the Astros players weren't going to do it in spring training. I think Jim Crane has handled it perfectly. He's apologized. He's the face of the organization. Like, Jose Altuve, Bregman, like, what are they going to say? What are they going to say when they say in spring training and give out a hard apology for the rest of the players for the Houston Astros locker room? I just don't really see the point of it. I'm on your side with this.
Look, I'm through talking about it. Can we move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
You think that's all right?
Yeah, Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. We'll move on from that, but I'm going to tell you why sports fans are getting soft. There's two reasons. First, Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are catching heat for shaming Zion Williamson in his NBA
debut. I don't like the way
debut.
You phrase that, though, JB.
What did I say?
You said sports fans are getting soft. I think you're unfairly lumping them because I'm a sports fan and I'm not soft.
sports fans outside of Houston are getting soft with the way that they view sports. Why are you still looking at me funny? Why are you looking at me funny?
What you're fixing to talk about, what they did, you heard about it through some kind of media outlet, I'm assuming.
Twitter.
Oh, okay. So, but it wasn't.
There's a Twitter.
I know,
but
it wasn't.
There's like
if I do something on Twitter like this, if I were to go at Mark Jackson or something, I understand that I'm representing Sports Radio 610. So it's some kind of media. Was it just a fan, or was it some kind of
like a collection of people that are upset that JVG, Jeff Van Gundy, and Mark Jackson are catching heat for what they're describing as fat shaming Zion Williamson? And all they did was they brought into question Zion Williamson and his weight, and saying that they have a little bit of concerns that Zion Williamson might be too heavy to play NBA season 82 games at a high level, which is a fair critique of Zion Williamson. If you're critiquing Zion Williamson, what are your two major concerns? Mine are, one, can he stay healthy with how big and how athletic he is? And two, can he avoid eating himself out of the league? He's a bigger player. If he puts on some weight, all of a sudden he'll look like Charles Barkley. I don't think that's fat shaming. I think it's two NBA analysts doing their job.
Yeah, look, fat shaming, you're talking about an athlete that's by legal, I mean, not legal is not the right word, but by definition of being overweight, I wouldn't think is overweight.
I don't think he's overweight right now. I think he can be. I think he was at the start of the season whenever he had the knee issues. I think he worked hard to get in better shape.
You're talking to the wrong dude, man. I don't understand why people are so sensitive. You know what I mean? Like, to this degree, man, I understand there's people out there that abuse the use of those kinds of terms and get into trouble and use them in a negative way, and it's something to be taken serious. But to say that you're concerned about Zion Williamson's weight being a problem as it relates to his ability to stay healthy and his level of explosiveness and athletic ability, to couch that in a way that it hurts your feelings, man, come on, man. The hell out of here.
All right,
I ain't got time for that either. We'll go on to the next. What's next? You done? I done had to tell you to get the hell out of here on two things. Who else you got?
One of the other ones where people are getting a little soft with is Mike Florio and the way he described how San Francisco needs to defend Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl in 9 days.
He's catching heat, too.
He's catching heat. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Here's what Mike Florio had to say that he's catching heat over.
At a certain point, you trade the risk of 15 yards if you can send a message. And football is still a physical, violent game. If you can hit him, even if it's close to the sideline, even if he's maybe started into his slide, when the championship is riding on it, I think it's a different analysis. And yeah, we may give up 15 yards or half the distance to the goal line. I mean, that's the thing, Peter. If somebody had blown up Patrick Mahomes inside the five, okay, it goes from the four to the two. Right. Big deal.
He sounds like somebody I know. He sounds like a familiar name and that's famous, but I can't put my finger on it. Anyways, he's getting a little bit of heat, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, because he said, hey, if you get an unsportsmanlike penalty, if you hit Pat Mahomes late, yeah, maybe you sacrifice a couple of hits for those 15-yard penalties in a way to defend Kansas City and slow down Pat Mahomes.
Poor execution by what's his name, Florio?
Mike Florio.
But poor execution, Florio. I will co-sign what I believe his point was, and we talked about it yesterday, is when you're playing in today's game, there's rules in place that were put in place to protect guys like Tom Brady, that were put in place to protect guys late in their career like Troy Aikman and these pocket passer types of guys, okay? There's those rules are, I hate to say outdated because some of them are recent, right? But they're outdated relative to the way the quarterback position is being played by a handful of guys in this league, and which I think will become the majority in this league over the next 10 years. And so I think that you watch the way that Pat Mahomes, a big bodied, not real. Is it elusive or elusive?
Elusive.
E or A. I got hammered on the text line earlier for my vocabulary. Is it elusive?
Well, how are you talking about it? You're talking about
elusive. You're hard to catch me. Is that an E or an A?
It's an E.
Okay, there you go. It's an E. Elusive, all right?
I don't even know what elusive means.
I don't either, but I got hammered on the text line. I'm trusting that there is an elusive. I'm talking about elusive.
Elusive means working by suggestion rather than explicit mention. So, yeah, you're not talking about that one.
No, not talking about that one. I'm talking about elusive. So Pat Mahomes is not as elusive as he appeared to be last week on the touchdown run.
Yeah.
It was a great run, great play. All my sensitive folks out there, I'm not banging on Pat Mahomes. He's great. He's phenomenal. But that run was aided by the fact that the DBs and the linebackers feel like if they go all out and just de-cleat Pat Mahomes on the sideline, they're more than likely going to get a penalty. So you err on the side of pulling up. Next thing you know, the guy takes it 30 yards, okay? All I'm saying is in this game, what I think Mike Florio was trying to say was you err on the side of de-cleating him.
Uh-huh.
And if it so happens to be a tick late, then you're willing to eat that 15 yards for the flag or that half the distance to the goal line. I don't in any way, shape, or form, and I may be giving him too much credit, but I don't in any way, shape, or form think that Florio went on the mic and was like, hey, headhunt Pat Mahomes. I don't see where Pro Football Talk benefits from that going down, right? I love his point, though, of this is a game where it's all or none. You cannot afford to give Pat Mahomes an extra 10 yards because you pull up on the sideline expecting him to run out of bounds, and he doesn't run out of bounds. No, de-cleating, make him get up and adjust his helmet, make him get up and buckle his chin strap, and if you get 15 tagged to it, then dang it, we're gonna have to eat that one.
Yeah, I'm all for making Mahomes uncomfortable. I'm not telling anybody to be unsportsmanlike, but yes, make the quarterback uncomfortable. Try to get him off the spot. It's not anything that's overly complicated, and I think Florio is just probably trying to over-describe it, maybe lost his touch a little bit. While we're on the subject of Pat Mahomes running, do you know what his 40 time was at the combine?
No.
A 4.8. Do you know who also had a 4.8 at the combine running his 40? Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is equally as fast as Pat Mahomes. That was making the rounds after Pat Mahomes had a nice rushing game this past weekend.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm just here to tell you, he's a good player, and he's more mobile than a 4.8, but he's not a 30-yard scramble down the sideline with a spin move fast and nimble and quick. I mean, that is a result of people not pursuing and people not dropping the hammer on a quarterback because they're scared of getting a flag. I don't know what to tell you. That's just the fact of the matter, and I feel like this is a game – being a Super Bowl, being the last game of the season where you flat drop the hammer on the dude, period. I think the NFL's in a bad spot, JB. The NFL has to find a way to adjust the rules moving forward because the position's being played in a different manner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not just being played in a different manner by Michael Vick, a one guy you got to protect or a once-of-a-lifetime type player. It's coming down the pipe where the way that you're protecting quarterbacks in general is allowing athletic quarterbacks to do things like you saw Pat Mahomes do last week. And I just don't think – I think you got to trend back in the other direction of letting these guys be football players.
One of the things I don't hold against you is that you're an SEC guy. Did you see the contract that Ed Orgeron signed today? 6 years, $42 million. There was questions whenever he took that job that LSU didn't – really make a great hire, that they hired Coach O because Herman turned them down. Now, Coach O is doing a lot better in Baton Rouge than what Herman's doing over in the state capital.
JB, I was working for SEC Network when he got hired, and I ain't going to say any names, but there was a large percentage of guys that I was working with at that time that were disgusted with this hire and thought that this was the worst thing LSU. How could LSU do this? Fire the AD, yada, yada, yada. Can't believe this happened. Now, those same guys right now are going, I knew it was great. I knew it was a great hire. He won a national title. I knew he'd do it. He's a Louisiana guy. But I tell you, they hated that hire. This dude has got big, big money, and I love it. I love Ed O, man. I love everything he stands for. He was at that coaches award that the Bear
Walked
Bryant.
Right by us. Didn't say right, a word, but I could hear everything he said.
I would have liked. There you go. He can buy a whole bunch of boudin right now. I'm going to go eat me some bugs tonight, boy.
Are you? Where are you going?
I'm going to eat me some. I'm going to probably hide away in Mont Bellevue.
Yeah.
By the way, I found the two videos.
Of
throwing that ball through the
grease.
Oh,
I'm
going to
watch that
when
we go up here.
I'm going to post it on. This is another shameless plug. I plugged my Twitter twice yesterday. I'll plug it again, at Clint Sterner. I'm going to post two videos for all you suckers out here talking trash on this text line. I'm going to post two pictures of, and keep in mind, the one that goes in the garbage can was the very first try, and the one that goes through two reefs was probably four or five throws through the whole thing. And
got
so
Uncle Rico over here.
Yeah, I'm just going to let y'all know. I'm just letting y'all know before y'all go running your mouth on this text line what you're dealing with, because I'm not a big fan of alligator mouths and hummingbird asses now. I want you to know what you're getting into. I don't like to take people by surprise. I don't like to set people up to fail. Bottom line is, I got there's more of them over here talking, just trashing, just trash talking.
Hey, what's this deal with you calling Lopez grumpy?
Oh, grumpy.
Yeah, it says right here you call him grumpy.
Oh, he was talking about earlier about that. He don't the Pro Bowl. I don't want to go. I don't wanna watch the Pro Bowl. Pro Bowl is boring. I'm going fishing. I ain't watching no Pro Bowl.
I have no interest in watching the Pro Bowl too.
It's not the Pro Bowl, bro. It's an opportunity to get together with your friends and family and watch the pigskin get tossed around and some of the greatest let their hair down and have fun and drink some pops, man.
Why can't you do that at watching some college basketball or something?
Well, I mean, it's 6-1 way, half dozen another. If you've got other things to watch, cool.
Lopez is going to do it on the boat. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it's fine. Well, I just didn't like him. He's grumpy. He was grumpy on it. And by the way, he's the only guy I know. Lopez is the only guy I know that I mean, I grew up with. In a Mexican community, and my best friend is a Mexican, and he has a lot of aunts and uncles, and I've never heard him pronounce Kelly with a Hispanic twist to it.
I've never heard that either. What was he saying? Kelly.
It was his Aunt Kelly.
Aunt Kelly.
Aunt Kelly. Yeah. And I said, boy, I done heard it all. Lopez done found a way to put a Spanish twist on or a Hispanic twist on Kelly.
Yeah.
Aunt Kelly.
My grandma calls me Jeremias every now and then.
Who?
Jeremias, Jeremy. Jeremias. You know, the J's an H. Jeremias. All right, that's all the time we have for you. Thanks so much, Brian McDonald, behind the glass. Thanks to the General John McClain for stopping by earlier. For Clinch Turner, I'm Jeremy Branham. We'll talk to you later, Houston.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.